Let us turn this morning to the 13th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew chapter 13. In our study in Matthew so far, we've seen the advent of the king, his birth in Bethlehem, the presentation of the king by John the Baptist, the constitution of the kingdom in the Sermon on the Mount, the nature of the kingdom, how he went about doing good, healing all who were oppressed of the devil, and the proclamation of the kingdom and the different responses to it. The common people heard him, but among the rulers there was increasing opposition. In chapter 13, we come to the mysteries of the kingdom. Now, a mystery in the Bible is not something mysterious. It is something that was previously unknown, but now revealed unto those who are initiated or who are a part of the people of the Lord. These mysteries are presented to us in the form of parables. Now, a parable, too, is a specific word with a definite meaning. The simple meaning of it is a comparison. And a parable can be a very brief comparison, or it can be a longer story. But a parable always has one main point. Some of the longer parables, some of the details have meaning, but they don't necessarily have to. And if they have meaning, it is always in relation to the one central meaning of the parable. In this section, Matthew gathers together parables that happened. Some of them happened immediately following the last chapter, and some of them were at different times, as the other Gospels show us. But in these parables, Jesus is telling the mysteries of the kingdom, which are to be revealed to his disciples, but they are proclaimed to the whole world. My understanding of these parables is not the same as I read in most of my commentaries, for I am convinced that all of these parables are descriptive of the ministry of Jesus from the time of his baptism until the time of the cross. However, each of the parables contains a principle or a truth that is eternal, at least eternal so far as this life is concerned, in that it frequently applies to a situation. In other words, the principle is not limited to Jesus' time, but the intention of the parable was his ministry and the reception it received from the Jewish people. So reading in the 13th chapter of Matthew, we read what is a very familiar parable to most of us. The same day went Jesus out of the house and sat by the seaside, and great multitudes were gathered together unto him, so that he went into a ship and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And he spake many things unto them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went forth to sow. And when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. And some fell upon stony places, where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprang up, because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. And others fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some an hundredfold, some sixtyfold, and some thirtyfold. And who hath ears to hear, let him hear. This was a very common sight in Palestine at that time that Jesus used for this parable. Edersheim said that he could picture Jesus pointing to a person out on the hillside sowing wheat at that time of the year, and use that as his for his parable. Now, they did not plant and sow and reap like we do. And this is important to the parable. They would plow after they sowed the seed, while we plow beforehand to prepare the ground. Theirs was a very inefficient way of farming, and this is one reason why they frequently had famine. The sower would take seed in a bag, and he would go out to the field that he wanted to sow, and he would go through there and scatter the seed. Then he would come back with a plow, which was a very shallow plow, usually pulled by either a person or a donkey, and just disturb the surface of the ground enough to cover the seed. And that is the way they plowed, and that shows why the rest of the parable was, and the other parables were so meaningful. The very soils that he had, this is called the parable of the sower, but it's more the parable of the soils in the ground. And there were these various soils in the same field. This was a very mountainous and a very rocky country. Only in the Jordan Valley and in the Northern Valley, where Armageddon is there deep, fertile soil. And the topsoil is very thin. And that's one reason why they didn't plow too deeply, because it was too rocky. So in this field, there were probably, over the time when the field wasn't sowed, paths where people would walk and trample down the earth, and so the plow didn't disturb it properly enough. And one A.T. Robertson said that this word here, that as it's descriptive here, shows that these thorns were not thorn bushes standing at the time. They had probably been cleared off, but from the wording of the Greek text, the roots of the thorn were in the ground. And so the thorn, he couldn't really tell that there were thorns there when he was sowing the seed, but then the thorns grew up, and as they grew up very thick and choked out these the seed that was sown. So then, in the 10th verse, this is what he told the crowd. The kingdom of heaven is likened to this sower and these soils. In the 10th verse, and the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? And he answered and said unto them, Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but unto them it is not given. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he that shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away, even that he hath. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. This is the eighth time in which this phrase is used in this gospel. By hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, and by seeing ye shall see and not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and for your ears, for they hear. This sounds very arbitrary, and it has been taken to be very arbitrary by many people. But it is just the way things are. Take Jesus' word, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. That too seems very arbitrary, does it not? But you can see how it is just the way it is. Because if you go onto an elevator first, who's going to get off last? If you come sit down for a meeting, formal meeting here for a wedding, and when there's dismissal, who's going to be dismissed first? And who's going to be dismissed last? So the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. And it's just the way in the nature of things as they are. And his disciples came unto him, and why speakest thou unto them in parables? And he answered and said unto them, because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but unto them it is not given. And that seems very arbitrary too. But it is a fact in our own country. This nation has been saturated with the gospel. And yet there are people here who have never heard the gospel with any sensitivity whatsoever. I remember my friend Rosen, whom I met on the street corner here. He, when he wrote his book, Jews for Jesus, he gave me a copy and inscribed it to Orville, who first told me the gospel so that I understood. He had heard the gospel. He knew the story of Jesus' life. And in fact, all of the Jewish people do. But it had not become real to him before. And that was the way this crowd was. And so Jesus uses something familiar to pique their interest. What does it mean? But most of them just heard it and went their way, just like today also. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which we read. That is quoted from the sixth chapter of Isaiah. So in order to understand what Jesus is saying there and his attitude toward the crowd, we need to go back to Isaiah and see what his prophecy meant. We'll read from the first verse to get the setting. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. And above it stood the seraphims, each one had six wings, with twain he covered his face, with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken from the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips. Thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin is purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and to whom will I go? Then said I, Here am I, send me. And he said, Go tell this people, Hear ye indeed, but understand not. See ye indeed, but perceive not. Make the heart of this people fat, and make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and understand with their heart, and convert and be healed. Here, this is the call of Isaiah to the prophetic office, and this was his message. It was one of judgment. In his day, his people had apostatized, and the judgment of God was looming over the nation. Within about 100 to 125 years after this time, they would be destroyed. And it was because they had already turned away from God and thus had dulled their senses and their understanding, that their eyes were dim and their ears were plugged, that they could not understand the truth. And so this was a retributive judgment on God, that is, the result of the circumstance. It was a cause and effect situation. So now that was the message God gave Isaiah to give to his people in his day, and now Jesus quotes that as being the same condition among the mass of the people of Israel in Jesus' day. And we might say that this is a principle that has persisted ever since and is present in our own country today too. As I said, this country is saturated with the gospel, and yet the majority of Americans have become hardened to it. And so when they read the Bible, they don't understand it because their heart is not in a condition to receive it. And that is the meaning of the parable of the soils here. The receptivity of people to the seed of the gospel. And Jesus here told his disciples, But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous persons have desired to see those things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear the things which ye hear, and have not heard them. Because now the disciples were in a position to understand the prophecies given beforehand that pertained to Jesus when he came. Hear therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he which received seed by the wayside. There were many people in those crowds that followed him that were just of this nature. They saw him divide the fish and the loaves. They ate of the fish and the loaves, but did not understand or even really appreciate what he had said. And he that receives seed into stony places, the same is he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receiveth it. Yet hath he not root in himself, but dureth for a while. For when tribulation or persecution riseth because of the word, by and by he is offended. And I'm sure that all of you have known people of that nature too. That they received the gospel, but it didn't really take hold in their heart. He also that receives seed among thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke out the word and becometh unfruitful. These were people who had produced life because the seed had sprouted and grown up, but they were unfruitful because of the cares of life. That also we see in our midst, but this was descriptive of the crowds that followed Jesus too, that he was ministering to. But he that receiveth seed into good ground is he that heareth the word and understandeth it, which also beareth fruit and bringeth forth some 100-fold, some 60-fold, and some 30-fold. 100-fold harvest is a bumper crop. But as one of my commentaries, well, it was A.T. Robertson, said that in the fertile ground of the Jordan Valley or of the Esdraelon Plain, such a crop was possible, even by the primitive plowing and planting methods of that time. And in this last group, those who produce fruit, but in varying degrees, you can see that in all of your acquaintances that you know of who are believers, how for some the Word of God grips their heart, and in others they assent to it and they live a good life, and in others the effect is less effective in producing fruit in their lives. And this parable is easy to understand. Some of the other parables are more difficult, but this parable is the key to understanding all of the other parables, not only in this chapter, but in this book. It is a description of Jesus' ministry and of his hearers. And another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in the field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, sir, didst thou not sow good seed in the field? Whence cometh tares? And he said unto them, an enemy hath done this. The servants said unto him, wilt thou that we go and gather them up? But he said unto them, nay, lest while ye gather up the tares and root up also the wheat with them, let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest I will say to the reapers, gather ye together the first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. This again is not very difficult to understand, but it is descriptive of the message of Jesus as he preached it and its reception by the those who heard him. He planted, he planted good seed in the field, and while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went away. Now only a malicious person would do such a thing, because tares are the word in the Greek word that was used is zizania, and the zizania is a species of mustard. They call it black mustard. It is the only species of mustard that is poisonous. And it is very poisonous. But it looks so very much like, it was not a mustard that it was like. It was like rye, black rye. And the black rye plant is so very much like the wheat that it's impossible to tell the difference between them until they fruit. And its seed is poisonous. When the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then when the seed had started to form, they could tell the difference. But it was throughout the whole field in the same way. Only a very malicious person would do such a thing as that. And so it is very easy to understand. And an enemy did this, and that, of course, was the devil in his parable. For the field was the land of Israel, where he was proclaiming the kingdom. And those who received his word were those who were the wheat. But there were also the tares. Some of them were Pharisees. Some of them were scribes. Some of them were priests. And some of them were others of malicious intent. But have you ever asked yourself, why would the Lord let such evil happen to among his people? This explains why he would let the wheat and tares grow up together. Because to root out the tares would uproot the wheat also. But the wheat was of a good nature, and it would remain good even with the tares among them, and they would be separated at a later time. So this was the response. Jesus was not taken by surprise. We read that when he knew their thoughts of the crowd, he knew who were his and he knew who were not. He was not ignorant of the condition of the crowd, but he would let things go on until the proper time of the harvest. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Now the principle of the first parable was that of the reception of the seed. What reception his words received. By some, it was received in different ways by different hearers among the crowd. The point of the second parable is that there is always good and evil mixed together in this life. And it is no different where the gospel is preached. There is good and evil, and good and evil persons. But in the there's a different principle in the parable of the mustard. I'm sure that you have seen these little things, some little articles that some Bible bookstores carry with a grain of mustard seed enclosed in plastic. It gives you an idea of how small that seed is. Someone once said to me, that is not the smallest of seeds. I've seen seeds smaller than that. But that was the smallest of the seeds that a farmer would plant in Palestine in that day. And that was Jesus' point. The point was not that it was the smallest seed possible, but the growth. Because this mustard seed grows wild in the Jordan Valley. It is also cultivated in fields. And this particular species of mustard in the Holy Land sometimes grew to be 15 to 18 feet high. Now, I've grown mustard, and perhaps you have too, and it doesn't grow that high, not the species that we have, but it says it's the largest of the herbs. Now, an herb is a plant that has a hard, well, you wouldn't call it a hard outside cylinder, and the inside is with a soft pith, so that if you bend it, it'll break and hang over. You would be surprised at some of the things that would come under that same classification botanically. For instance, a palm tree. Now, a palm tree has the same sort of structure as the common weeds that grow in your yard. But this mustard seed would grow to such a height that it would have the appearance of a tree, so that the small birds — he's not talking about hawks, and he's not talking about raptors and that kind of heavy birds — but small birds such as finches and the like, and sparrows, would gather in the branches there, and they would eat the seeds. And the point of this parable is the rapid growth. Jesus' ministry started out with just a few disciples as when he was baptized by John the Baptist. But these crowds, as he began to minister and to perform miracles, these crowds began to grow, and they became all but unmanageable. And we read it on one time he fed 4,000, and another time he fed 5,000 miraculously. And for the populations of that time, that was an enormous crowd. And the principle here is growth. How rapidly grew his followers. So much so that the high priest said to the Jewish council, "This man does many miracles. If we leave him alone, everyone will follow him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation." So the point of this parable is rapid growth, but also that it is an herb. It is not a woody bush. And it, an herb, most of the herbs are annuals. When the winter time comes, the herb dies. The herbs that you grow in your garden for spices, they are annuals, and they seed down themselves. So what this, the point of this article is the rapid growth of the followers of Jesus, but he was not fooled. He did not except that all of those people were really his followers. He knew who his real disciples were, but he still ministered unto all. But when the winter of opposition to Jesus' life and ministry came, we read that the crowds fell away. And when he was crucified, he was bereft of all followers. Even his close followers, all but John and his mother and aunt and a few of those. So this was a phenomenon of short duration. The gospel that he of the kingdom that he preached, because he knew that by the majority it would not be accepted, but that it would be accepted by some, and he knew who they were. And that principle applies today too. The gospel is preached unto all, but all do not become followers. And we have liked to think that this was a Christian nation, and it certainly was founded upon Christian principles, but not everyone who hears the gospel accepts it. And you remember, most of us here do, the Billy Graham Crusades and the crowds that they drew, and how the results of those crusades were sometimes 30-fold, sometimes 60, sometimes 100-fold. But where is the result of those crusades in America today? That revival time is past. But his true disciples persevere, and that is our business. We'll pick up the other parables next week.